Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything.
It's Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out. The bad seed, broken day, the bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad others, bad taste, bad luck, bad dude, bad breath, bad attention, bad vibes. We are live in the Farrell Palatial, right across the river and through the woods from where Granny's in the hospital. It's not a good situation. And I knew the one thing that she wanted more than anything else, not morphine, but she wanted that Fruity Pebbles. And I'm not talking about cereal in New York City, the Big Apple. Ooh. People trust the plastic bags, the red to traffic, some kind of fashion shake it up should do. But all my friends that come around, fight the flights of party up, rats on the west side, bed bugs uptown, what a mess, this town's a tatter. My brain's splattered all over Manhattan, should do be shake it. Ooh. Hey, it's Farrell with Mafia tonight. 844-843-6879 is the number to get on the bench. Again, the scoring as it rolls on throughout the night in these conference semis and finals, we're up to date on everything. Gonzaga at the half up big, 44-26 on St. Mary's. In the first half, Northeastern leads Drexel by 4. Oakland in the first half leads Northern Kentucky by 6. North Dakota, South Dakota, it's North Dakota State, South Dakota, 14 apiece, first half, 10 in. And then Elon in the semis of the CAA beat Hofstra 76-58. Cleveland State by 6 over Milwaukee. I think they were laying 4. That was it, so they covered. Oral Roberts covered the 5 against South Dakota State and beat them 90-88 in the Summit League semi. In the MAC first round, Ryder over Canisius by a bucket. Appalachian State in the Sun Belt championship game beat Georgia State 80-73. And Greensboro's going dancing from the SoCon. They beat Mercer by 8. Later, at around midnight, right after this Gonzaga game, another one from the Orleans, BYU and Pepperdine. They're playing in Vegas. I believe that's where that tournament is going on, the WCC at the Vegas Orleans in Sin City. That's all of the college basketball going on tonight. And then as far as hockey goes, I have this game going. Wild and Knights in the third in Mini. 1-0. Mini leads Vegas. And then Senators Oilers, end of one. It's 1-1 in Edmonton, 1-1 Senators and Oilers. The Coyotes lead at the Pepsi Can in Denver, 2-0 in the second period. The Blues lead in San Jose in the second period, a minute in, 1-0. The Canadiens and Canucks are set to go in Vancouver any minute. Same thing with the Kings and Ducks on the pond in Anaheim. Of course, it's the NBA All-Star break, so no basketball until Thursday on the pro side, which is a absolute drag. I can't live without NBA racks, son. We welcome our radio... honestly, dude. I mean, honestly. We welcome in SiriusXM, Mightier 1090, Sports Map, and Sports Byline, for Christ's sakes. So welcome. I just love to welcome everyone like 55,000 times a day. God, I just can't get enough of welcoming everyone. It stirs my blood to just welcome. Thank you for being a part of the family. Jesus. I can't live without NBA basketball. I really can't. And it's got me just, I'm a mess. I can't even function. I can't eat. I can't sleep. I can't do anything. I may start drinking again. Seriously. What am I going to do without NBA games to bet on? What am I going to do? I mean, I have no idea what to do now. And then what's worse? Seriously, let's just get real here for a second. No one can even admit it, but I will. These games on college basketball just suck. They're the worst. Like, who cares? I mean, honestly, betting on them's bad enough. Watching them's even worse. All these games, and if you go there, good for you. Good for you. Congratulations. No one cares. I watched the SoCon. I wanted to gouge my eyes out. The Sun Belt. I was watching that. That game was over. I wanted to gouge my eyes out. Ryder and Canisius, 2-point game. I wouldn't watch if you paid me. Oral Roberts in South Dakota, 2-point game. Good luck. Good luck finding it. Cleveland State in Milwaukee. I'd rather be in divorce court than watch that game. Elon and Hofstra. I said today on Coast to Coast, the only reason I bet on Elon because I used to have Elon skis when I was a kid. They made skis. And then South Dakota, North Dakota State, what a thrill for everyone. All these games are just so exciting. I can't tell you how much I enjoy watching Gonzaga beat everyone by 30 every time they play. Where do I sign up to watch Gonzaga pace the WCC competition and sleep with their girlfriends? They blow out everyone. It's like the rest of the conference absolutely sucks.
Football, the goal line. Baseball, home plate. Basketball, the net. Sports talk, right here. You're listening to the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Pharrell on the bench, so we're building a studio at the Pharrell Palatial, finally. So the guy shows up today after I waited 3 months for him to show up because he's super busy. I know the guy, he's cool. And he's done work in my house before. He's good at what he does. Anyway, the guy's super, you know, in demand and busy. So like what happens is he gets, you know, booked up and locked up on these projects and you can't get him to, you know, do a project with you. You can't get him because he's too busy. And I mean, year round, it doesn't matter if there's COVID. It doesn't matter if the world's on fire. This guy's busy. He's just always busy. The last time, the last few months, I tried to get him to come and do it, and he's been building some kind of ski lodge in the mountains. Do we have mountains around here, Mafia? Are they hills? I think they're hills.
There's mountains like an hour away where No, you know the place that I went for my honeymoon. There's mountains over there.
Oh, yeah, that place is, they got a ski mountain up there. But there's a few ski resorts around here if you like skiing on ice. Anyway, so he was up there building a like a ski lodge, like an A-frame ski lodge type thing. And he was there forever. And I was like, dude, honestly, are you ever? Because he came to my house a few times just to look at the scene and the situation to see if he could, you know, envision. He had to do all the measurements and order all the stuff and do all this stuff. And then he was there a few times. And every time he'd be there, he'd tell me like he was going to do it. And he'd tell me this date or that date. And this is when I think I'm going to be able to get here and start it up. And I literally, Mafia knows, I waited like 3 months at least where I thought like this was going to be done, like that they were already going to start building this thing. Allegedly, it was going to be done in like February, right? So it was going to start February, allegedly, like the first or second of February, it was going to start. But then it didn't start until today. What is today? March 8th? And I was like tripping. So the guy shows up bright and early. They start going down and just shredding my basement where I'm doing this. And I'm doing like a whole studio and a giant game room. This is them shredding my... That's actually my daughter. They hired her to be on the saw, manual saw, hacksaw.
For demolition purposes?
Yeah. For she got on the hacksaw Hamilton and started fixing some stuff. Anyway, so one thing leads to another. I leave. They start working. They're tearing stuff down. There's like some dudes there tearing stuff down. And like the old frame of the house and all the rest. They're tearing down all these walls and tearing all the stuff apart. And then I'm like, I left, right? I went to the gym and then I went to the dentist today and I got my teeth cleaned or whatever. I hadn't done it in a while. What do you do it every 6 months or something like that? So I'm in the dentist chair and the guy says to me, I think I said this today on Coast to Coast. He said, you know, my brother's married to Ariel's cousin. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you know, Ariel Epstein. I'm like, oh, yeah, I work with her. And then he shows me this picture of Ariel and I doing Coast to Coast. So now I know that my dentist creeps up on us, Mafia, and watches the show. He admits that he watches now. He's finally, most of my friends and colleagues and people I know, dentists, doctors, things of this nature, accountants, you know, lawyers, wife, kids, Mafia. None of them listen to the show. Like Mafia just kind of sits through the show for 17 years. He's not actually listening.
What?
He's just... So like this guy says to me today, he goes, yeah, I saw you with Ariel. And I was like, okay, that's awesome. I said, she's awesome. I'm good friends with Ariel. She's cool. She does my show like once a month or something like that. At least she does a show every morning. It's called The Morning After. It's really popular. And then he's like, yeah, her aunt is married to my, or something like that, to my brother. And I'm like, all right. So that's cool. And then I'm sitting there in the dentist chair and the phone goes off and it's 34C and she's telling me the guy's threatening to leave. And I'm like, what do you mean he's threatening to leave? And I started dropping bombs. I'm in the dentist chair and I'm just like, you tell that mother forever. I go, if he even goes in the driveway and gets in his truck to leave or to do something else, I am going to find him and I'm going to smack his face. And I'm like, I've waited months on end and I have spent tons of money on this project. And I'm like leaving. And she tells me that, you know, remember Mafia, I did all this project to like clean out everything and get it ready. I cleaned the entire basement. I mean, for months I did it. I had a dumpster in my driveway. I did it. I had this dumpster there for like a month. And for a month straight, I emptied this thing out. and got it all ready. The guy even came to my house and said, you did a great job. We're ready to go. Let's go. Then he gets down there today. He's like, I can't work with all this stuff in here. And I'm like, so I came driving home and I saw him and I'm like, bro, he goes, I'm going to have to leave and go to another project. And when you get it done, then I'll come back. And I went, bro, you are not leaving. You are not going to another project. You are not going to another gig. You are not going to another construction site. You are not leaving and telling me you're coming back when it's done. That's not happening. I said, I'll tell you what, you're going to keep working and I'm going to sit here and do this. Whatever needs to be done, I'm going to do it. What more needs to be done? Because I've already done it, right? I already did the whole basement. And there's still a bunch of stuff down there. But he told me where to put it, right? Like, so move it out of the way. Here's where the studio's going. Here's where the rest of the project is going. There, you know, because I'm redoing the entire basement. I'm doing everything. I'm putting in a game room, a entertainment room, a bar, just a blowout, and then a studio. And then I'm like, okay, well, what needs to be moved? And he's like, I can't work with all this stuff in here. I said, listen, dude, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to grab a drink, and then I'm going to come down here and I'm going to do it myself again. I'm going to lift everything out of here. I'm going to do whatever it takes. You're not leaving here. You're not leaving. You're not
starting to annoy me.
You're not starting something else and then coming back to me in a month. It's not happening. I go, you're going to be here tomorrow too. Or I'm going to sleep with your wife.
No.
And your daughter. I am no good. Mafia knows I'm no good. I already got mad on the show. Like 6 minutes into the show, I'm mad. I'm in a foul mood today. I'm not even dealing with it.
Hey, I'm just trying to have a little friendly conversation.
So I end up lifting 50 million pounds of stuff again today and moving it. And now I guess it's all systems go and it's back on. I'm like, bro, just put a plastic over all this stuff. I don't care if there's dust. Just do it. I don't even care. I will throw all of this shack out. I'll throw the whole thing out. I don't care what she says. My wife is an effing hoarder. I have stuff from like 1970 in my basement. Like, who cares? I wish I could find like a bag of weed and a big like ounce of blow or something, Mafia. You know what I mean? There's got to be something stashed in those boxes somewhere. I wish I had like a drug meter where I could just run a wave of wand over all the stuff and it would locate things for me. So the project is still on. Don't we have Jerry Eisenberg next? Jerry is awesome. Legendary sportscaster. He's going to talk about Ali Frazier. All right, Pharrell on the bench. Every few years, I've had Jerry Eisenberg on my show. He's like the most legendary sports writer basically ever. So, I mean, there's only one Jerry Eisenberg, and he has just been setting the standard for, I mean, literally since before Christ. I mean, Jerry is the man, and he is still so relevant, it's not even funny. Recently, he won... Again, the best reporting and writing sports columnist in like first place in New Jersey Press Association. I mean, the guy continues to write incredible stories about everything. One of them was Goodell, still owes Colin Kaepernick. The other one is a story on the Negro Leagues. And then it just goes on and on. This guy's brilliant career. One of the things I wanted to have Jerry on for was the 50th anniversary of Ali Frazier 1. And I watched that fight again last night. Let's bring him in, the iconic, legendary, the greatest columnist in the Northeast ever, Jerry Eisenberg. Good to have you back on the bench, Jerry.
Well, it's good to be here. And I'll even give you a 2-1 if you want to take Ali in the fight.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that you would give me those odds, Jerry. That's very nice of you.
The kind of guy I am.
Yeah, I know. So how about this guy, Mafia, trying to give me Ali when he knows Frazier won? So in the 11th round and 12th round, the beating that that Ali took, and he almost went down. He literally, his knees buckled. He was It was amazing when you saw him drop and he was going down. I don't know how he got like his bearings and stayed up. But the rest of that, like 11th round, he got pummeled by Frazier and took a beating like I've never seen before. Now, I know that after that fight, there was a lot of arguments about how long they both went to the hospital for. And the stories were that Ali didn't want anyone to know, you know, that he was in the hospital for very long. He claims he was in there for 10 minutes and that Frazier was in there like on death's doorstep with the beating that Frazier received from Ali. What do you remember most about that 11th and 12th rounds and the punishment that Ali took?
What I remember most really is that these guys, they fought three times. They always made each other better than they were. Because the necessity to beat each other was a driving force. You know, I don't know if you want to go in this direction, but the first fight was not the best of the trilogy.
That's right.
The first fight was exciting because of the people. The first fight, I believed, was not the fight of the century, but it was the fight of the century for the American people. The dividing line was Vietnam. And if you remember, about a year before that, hard hats and the hippies fought in the street in front of City Hall in New York. The tension and the division in the country was enormous. And so the people really wanted this fight. And the fact is, if you look back at the fight, Ali was not quite ready for the fight. That's not to denigrate Joe, because Joe won that fight by two or three clear rounds. But if you went to Gene Kelly and said, you are forbidden to tap dance for 3 years, now go star in this movie, what kind of a tap dance do you think you'd have?
Listen to him. Hey, so let me ask you something. You have said, I think, somewhere along the line that, and I think a lot of people agree with that, is that the Thrilla in Manila was the best of them, the third one.
Oh, no, the Thrilla in Manila, this is my 70th year in the business. Most of that time, I've seen a few fights, much of that time. I've never seen a heavyweight fight like that, and I never want to see one again like that. It was a ferocious fight. And you see, the thing, what made it so good is Ali was really convinced that Frazier couldn't fight anymore. Because we were in Malaysia when he fought Joe Buckner. And 2 days before the fight, there were eight riders. He summons us to his room and he says, fellas, I've been boxing too long. I'm quitting. You can go write the stories right now. Maybe you can make your deadlines back in the States. But that's it. You've seen, this will be my last fight. We all run. We write the story. Now, Dave Anderson from the Times and I are walking down the hall. And his door, Ali's door is open. And we hear, he can't fight. He can't fight. The man can't fight. I'll stretch him. I'll knock him out. I'll knock him cuckoo. And so we go in the room and he says, oh, hi, fellas. Look at that screen. And it's Frazier's most recent fight, which is nothing. And he said, that's what I'm, look, he can't stand up against me. And I said, are you telling me that you're not retired now? And he said, well, yeah, I got to fight him. I said, okay, I'll tell you this. I'll go write the story that you have just unretired, as will Dave. But you damn well are going to fight Frazier one way or the other, because neither one of us is going to write three stories tonight. And that's how we knew the Frazier fight was made. We get to Manila. Before we get to Manila, Eddie Futch, who is training Joe, hires Georgie Benton, a great middleweight, and he says, Georgie, your whole job is to teach Joe to throw a right hand. I used to kid Joe. I used to say, if your right shoelace comes untied, you're falling on the ground because you got only one hand and it's your left hand. You won't be able to tie it again. And they did a job with him, and they taught him. Well, okay, when the fight started, Ali's ahead, of course. He's dancing on his toes, jab, jab, right cross there. Terrific. About the second or third, maybe the third round even, I have to go back and look, but Frazier hits him with a right hand. And Ali, who swore he never talked in the ring, yells at Frazier, you got no right hand, you're an old man, you got... And bang, Frazier hits him with a second right hand. Not powerful, but he hits him. And he says, you go ask George Button Benton, well, I got a right hand. At that point, the purpose of the right hand was to distract Ali, because he thought he was fighting a one-armed fighter, and he'd fought him twice. And he was a one-armed fighter in both of those fights. But when that happened, Eddie Futch was convinced, if we get him thinking, it'll change the nature of his attack. And it did. He was thinking, well, the guy's got two hands, I got to think this through. As a result of that, Frazier's ahead. Then Ali's ahead. Then Frazier's ahead. And it's going up and down, all through the fight. It's brutal. We get to about the 10th round, and I say, I'm sitting between Jerry Lisker and Dave Anderson. Jerry's from the New York Post. And I said, I don't want, they ought to just take these guys and send them home. Nobody should lose this fight. Just tell them they both won and take a rest. Well, about Frazier's eyes begin to swell because the jab, that was Ali's jab. It wasn't a power jab, but it could cut you, although it didn't cut him. But it could close your eye. I mean, it was sting, 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 and it was rapid fire. So now, for him to fight, as you know, he always fought in a crouch. Now he's got to stand up straight and try to fight him around the 10th or 11th round. And as for Ali's point, he's exhausted. These two guys gave so much of themselves in that ring that night. I've just never seen anything like it. Well, along about the 12th to 13th, and you know it ended after 14th.
Right.
Frazier is standing there. His legs look like wet spaghetti. His arms are by his side. Ali is 2 feet away from him. If he walks 2 feet and pushes him, the fight is over. Ali could not walk the 2 feet. I looked at him. His belly was heaving like a beach whale when he went back to the corner. And after 14, they stopped it. Now, I always go by my scorecard, not the judges. I don't mean to denigrate them, but who am I going to believe, them or my lying eyes? I believe what I've done, what I've written down.
Right.
So on their scorecard, Ali was 2 points ahead, which meant he just survives the 15th round, and he's the winner, if there is a 15th round, which there wasn't. On my scorecard, Joe is behind 1 point. If he can win the 15th round, it's a draw. If he can knock Ali down, which he could, you know, that sledgehammer left hand, you never know, he wins the fight. But it never happened. They cut off the gloves. He's screaming at Futch, I'll never speak to you again, and you're hollering. Ali takes 3 steps off the stool and falls down. They say that he threw himself on the ground to avoid being hurt because people were jumping in the ring. Believe me, he was out of it. So now he's limping up the aisle toward the dressing room, and he sees Dave and Jerry and me, and he knows us very well. And he leans in and he says, fellas, that's the closest you will ever see to death. And I said to Lisker, I don't want to see anything closer because it'll mean we're all dead. Now, at that point, the fight ends, and I got to do something. I mean, writing a story is, you can do that pretty quickly. Writing a column, you got to have some thought behind it. I'm here in the Philippines, and I got to write this. I got half an hour to write this story. And I'm going to tell you, not to pat myself on the back, because it does describe the fight. I'm going to tell you what I wrote that night.
Hold on 1 second, Jerry. Jerry, give me 1 second. Let me take a break, and then we'll come back. And I want to hear the rest of the story. It's an amazing story. And I have to break, and then we'll come back, and we'll finish it up. We're talking to Jerry Eisenberg, the legendary sports columnist, and he's seen it all in his illustrious career, including all of the great Ali Frazier fights. He's reminiscing about the Thrilla in Manila, and that certainly weighed more than the Ali 1 and 2. The Thrilla was the one that everyone talks about to this day. They were honoring the 50-year anniversary of Ali Frazier 1. We're talking to Jerry Eisenberg on the bench.
Everybody's got an opinion. Go ahead.
Ask them.
But only a few have an opinion informed by expert analysis and experience. It's called trust.
It's why we're here.
For you. Keep it here and get the edge. You're listening to the Sports Grid Radio Network.
I mean, that 70s ballad is just so awful. I can't even, I don't even know what to say. Every time I hear it, I cringe. So Jerry Eisenberg is telling us the story of the Thrilla in Manila. So you got 30 minutes to post this story from the Philippines after that fight. And you were telling me that story right from about that point. How did you do it? How did you pull it off?
Well, the word is desperation. I kept thinking about the big white space in the paper. but I want to tell you what I said. I wrote, Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali did not come to Manila to fight for the WBC heavyweight title, nor were they here to fight for the championship of the planet. The way they fought, they could have fought in a phone booth on a melting ice floe because they were fighting with desperation. They made each other better, and they were fighting for the biggest prize of all to each of them, the championship of each other. And I remember at the bottom writing, and the way we saw, after what we saw last night, there is no way for it to ever be decided.
Wow. And
that's the way, I mean, Ali got the decision, but nobody won that fight. Nobody lost it either. It's a silly thing to say, but I've seen enough fights that it was, as a heavyweight fight, it was by far, far the best, most dramatic, most skillful at times that I've ever seen.
Well, let me ask you, because that's just incredible, the stories about, and your memory of it is so vivid and so crisp and clear. It's just fascinating. I can't tell you how cool that is, but I want to ask you another question off of that. I know you were good friends with, Pete Rozelle. And I have to ask you, what did Al Davis, that relationship with Rozelle, it seemed to me like it literally killed Pete Rozelle. I think that I watched that guy age like I've never seen anything. Like when he got that job, he was, Southern California.
The youngest commissioner in history.
Right. Youngest ever. He had the tan going, good looking guy, all the rest.
I wish him.
Spent 30 years arguing with Al Davis, and he had bags under his eyes. He was smoking four packs of cigarettes a day. Looked like he had fallen off a bar. What happened to Rozelle that relationship was so strenuous? I mean, you had to admit it, right? Like that they didn't, I mean, they didn't like each other, but they dealt with each other.
That's not true. They didn't like each other. They hated each other.
Right. Well, there you go. So, and then watching him hand.
More accurate.
Yeah. Watching him hand that trophy to him three times in the locker room, like they used to do it.
Yeah.
And not on the field. Like, I've never seen anything colder than a salmon hand. That guy, when he handed that Al Davis that trophy, he looked like he'd rather be in a casket than to be doing that. Like, what happened that aged him and drove him nuts?
Well, between them, first of all, you have to understand, Rozelle's attitude was, I'm not going to let a football coach tell me how to run this business. I'm running it better, which was true, running it better than anybody before me. And you might say a little better than anybody since, a lot better than current, what's happening now. But in any event, he knew his business. He knew what he wanted to do. He hired six guys, and every one of them had a background in public relations when he took over the job. So you knew what he was about. Davis was, I'm a football coach. Nobody's going to tell me how to run my football team. And no Madison Avenue, guy is going to beat me in a contest like this. Both of them were ruthless. Both of them were intense. And both of them suffered from it. As far as Rozelle, I will tell you this. It wasn't Davis who wore Rozelle down. It was smoking and late nights in the beginning, and what killed him was brain cancer, and was working on him a long time. But as far as their relationship, they really were don't invites, but they never ended what they thought. I'll give you an example. Pete's daughter They had two memorial services when Pete died. And Pete wanted two because he didn't want the West Coast guys to have to fly east. He didn't want the East Coast guys to have to fly west. So now the first one's out west. And his daughter is speaking at the very end of the thing. And when she finished, she's telling a story. And the story is about how she wanted a talking Barbie doll. And her father couldn't find it for Christmas. And he had NFL properties looking to find it. Just nobody could. It was the hottest toy on the market. Christmas morning, she sees Talking Barbie under the tree. She runs, she picks her up, she pulls the string, and Talking Barbie says, "Hola, ¿dónde está Juan?" They got it in Venezuela. She finishes that story to show the kind of father he was. Everybody in the room, you know, it's wonderful. And a nice, pleasant memory. The flash bulbs go off. You know, everybody who's got a camera, they're shooting a picture of her, and she's dazed for a second, and someone is pulling at her arm, and she looks down, and she says, and she sees Al Davis, and he looks up at her. She's on a platform, and he says, "Anne-Marie," he says, "I don't want you to think badly of me. I really loved your father. I really admired your father." And she looks at him, and she's seething, because she told me the story for the book. She says, here's this guy. He's using me. And my father and he didn't like each other. He didn't get along. He's using my father's memorial service as a photo op. And she starts to unload, and then she says, "What would my father have done?" And in typical Roselle smile, she just looks down at him and smiles. And in that moment, she was definitely the commissioner's daughter.
Wow, that's crazy. What did you think of Davis?
I liked him. First of all, we got along very, very well. Right. I knew some of the deals he pulled, and they were not good. But I know this. If you played for Davis, you had Davis in your corner all your life. 20 years after you retired, you still had Davis. I know that Davis was a guy committed to winning. Obviously, he got control of the team through a devious maneuver, which I won't go into right now. You're running out of time. But that was not a plus. But Davis knew how to win, and what stopped him was the illnesses. The illness really, I'll tell you what, Davis was a guy who didn't really much care about anybody for a long time, although we had a good relationship on the phone all the time when we were cross-country. But when his wife was deathly ill, he was a different person. I mean, really, it was like he had an out-of-body experience. He was kind, considerate, didn't try to bully anybody. I mean, it was okay. And then she got better, and then they went on from there. But Davis was a guy, he liked to play the tough guy. My mafia connections from, you know, from way back when I was a kid. Well, he didn't have that many connections. He did have a connection, by the way, with Meyer Lansky. I can tell you this quite quick story. He gets to his first Super Bowl, and he gets a phone call. He's in his room the first day. It's a week beforehand, or maybe 4 days before. And the phone lights up, and he comes back, and he picks it up. And it's a guy who says, I'm from the Funeral Directors Association. And Mr. Lansky told me to call you because he would like you to speak at our convention Friday night, that's two nights before the game, in Miami Springs. So he calls back and says, look, I would like to accommodate you, or Mr. Lansky said, but I can't do it. There's too much to do here. There's too many things to get done before the game. Then the morning of Friday, that Friday morning, he gets a phone call. There'll be a limo in front of the hotel at 6:30. Mr. Lansky hopes you'll be on time. Well, Meyer Lansky hopes you'll be on time. That's a pretty profound indictment. He goes and he speaks to the funeral directors. And I know this is true because later on at a banquet on the West Coast honoring a good friend of mine, he's speaking, and he told that story at the banquet.
That is,
and also
great.
He felt it enhanced his tough guy persona.
Yeah, he was something else, I got to tell you. So what do you think of I mean, it's crazy to me, and respectfully, I say this, that I think you're just absolutely amazing, that you're still writing books and you're still writing columns, and you've been doing it now for, I mean, how long did you say? 7 decades. That's crazy. And you're now, let's just get to the gist of it. You're 90 years old now, and you're still writing, and you're sharp as a tack. I can't even believe. Do you, there's got to be, like, you got to be something in the water or something where you're living.
No, I subscribe to the Satchel Paige theory, which I heard him say a long, long, long time before he died.
Right.
Because people were always arguing about his age. And he said, don't look back. Somebody may be gaining. About 5 years ago, I took the rear view mirror off my car and threw it away. I don't want a rear view mirror. I want to look straight ahead. I wrote this year my first novel.
I know.
And it's selling very well. It's based on my own experiences. It's the story of the city of Newark, which I grew up in and knew like the back of my hand. And it's the story of a lot of tension because we had the riot, and I covered the riot. And after the riot, different ethnic groups began leaving the city. I mean, some of them stayed, but basically it became an Italian-black power struggle for who's going to control it politically. And it became very venomous and very angry because of the memories from the riot. That was the setting for this book. Then there was a mayor election. Well, I brought in 3 mafia guys who I knew. Well, I knew 2 of them. I knew Vincita Bufiardo and I knew Carlo Gambino, but I did not know Frank Costello. But I brought him in because he was a negotiator, and that's why his nickname in the mafia was the prime minister. So they're trying to fix this election, and the tensions in the city are rising and rising and rising. And then the glue that holds the entire book together is a love affair between a black Italian co-ed, a black co-ed in college, and an Italian young man who's captain of the football team. And their struggles, I won't tell you how it ends, but their struggles are, I know what it was like. My wife is Afro-American. We began to date 6 years after the riots. It would have been very hard for us before that. I can tell you.
Hey, Jerry, what's the name of the book? What's the name of the book?
The name of the book is, it's a long name, After the Fire, :
Oh, that's right.
Love and Hate in the Ashes of 1967.
Yeah, I saw that. After the Fire, Love and Hate in the Ashes of 1967. Everyone read this book. There's no better writer in the world than Jerry Eisenberg. Jerry, thank you for coming on the show again for multiple times now you've been on. I always love hearing your stories. They're the best. They're fascinating. You're brilliant. I love you. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't look in the rearview mirror ever. Keep moving forward. You're the best. Thanks for coming on the bench.
It's always a pleasure.
All right, Jerry Eisenberg with us tonight on the bench. Thanks, Jerry. Mafia, your boy Jerry Eisenberg, you know, when he started talking about the mob, I was like, I thought to myself, I looked at the clock and I was like, you know, if we carry him over to the top of the hour, I was like, I bet he could tell us some mob stories for like another hour easy. Like, I mean, have you ever seen anything like, I didn't want to say anything to him because I've known Jerry for a long time and he may not admit that to anyone, but I've been doing this 35 years. He's only done it twice as long, but Jerry knows me, right? And I didn't want to say anything, but like, he's 90 years old. He's 90 years old, and he is literally as sharp as a switchblade. I mean, the guy is rattling off stories, 50-year-old stories from the thriller in Manila like it was last week. And I mean to tell you, I just told Mafia in a break, I don't even remember Friday.
Right, he remembers 50 years ago better than I remember 50 minutes ago.
I know, like, Jerry knows things, like he'll tell you stories like down to a T, down to literally down to the periods, you know, blah, 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 period. He'll tell you everything. And then I, you know, I think the difference is, my guess is that Jerry didn't smoke chronic for 70 years because I couldn't remember. I don't even know what day it is. Mafia, I'll be like, I think last week on Coast to Coast one day, I was like, what up, it's Thursday. And Mafia goes, it's Friday. I don't even know what day it is. And your boy Jerry's telling me stories. Man, once he started talking about the Gambinos, I was like, am I going to get like killed or something? Am I gonna get shot or something, or stabbed or shanked or put in a landfill? What's going on here? We got another hour. We got to talk about Dak's new deal in Dallas.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.